Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of The Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we have an earnest conversation about the Los Angeles Clippers. What's going wrong? What's going right? What can flip? And we talk about the Chris Paul of it all, since, you know, that news just perked up for us. The Bucks are going to be without Giannis. We don't know how long they're going to be without Giannis if things trend a certain way. We talk about what the Bucks may look like moving forward. Then we talk about the great play of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He is the head of the snake of the historically good Oklahoma City team right now. We talk about what makes him great, where he's leveled up. And then we get into some free throws, in which Steve gets mad at me. But you'll just have to listen to those to find out why. On this episode of The Dunker Spot, we hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday, sir. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. I'm ready to talk about some basketball, man. Ready to go. Raring to go. Based on what I see we're going to talk about.
Let's have some fun, or at least attempt to have some fun. So to peel the curtain back, as we had our episode earlier in the week, as we talked Spurs and we talked Knicks and we talked Celtics, talked Grizzlies, we get to the Los Angeles Clippers, right? And because our conversation flowed as well as it did before we got to the Clippers, in my head, I was like, you know what? We're going to be quick. Let me just get some quick Clipper thoughts out here. I'm kind of disappointed. This has been wonky. Let's get in, get out. Let's move to the next portion, right? I guess because I was so amped up, that just turned into a Clippers rant. And I did not know until I like clipped it, the post for social, that I just went for like 5 straight minutes. So that is not what I thought was going to happen there. And what makes this somewhat funnier is that 12, 13 hours after we finish recording or after the pod is officially posted, this is when more Chris Paul news comes in. I literally wake up to Chris Paul is no longer going to be a member of the Los Angeles Clippers, apparently, after team is traveling to Atlanta. They have plane issues, and there's a meeting between Chris Paul and leadership that starts at like 11 and goes on for multiple hours, and we get a Chris Paul IG post. And so imagine my pod brain, where it's like, oh, sure, this all comes out after the Clippers stuff, so that's funny. But I do just kind of want to reset with this Clippers group. Like,
More Clippers thoughts?
Like, kind of, because, like, I feel like I just ended up yelling. And, like, that wasn't what I intended to do.
Okay.
Now we do have, like, the Chris Paul backdrop. So I'm wondering if we should start with the Chris Paul of it all or just flow into the Clippers portion of this first.
Bingo card. Let's talk about the Clippers first.
Okay. So as of recording, as I am in a much calmer state right now, 6-16, they're 13th in the West. Per cleaning the glass, 17th in offense, 28th in defense, 25th in net rating. They have been middling to bad in half court play. 18th in offense, 21st in defense. They don't run all that often in transition, though they are efficient when they get there, / when they get stops, when they force turnovers. And the transition defense has been bad. And I think what we have largely seen from this Clippers group is the worst case scenario playing out. If you were skeptical of this group heading into the season, this is what it could look like. Version of the Clippers has largely played out. We've gotten, 12 games of Kawhi Leonard to this point. He's been very good in these 12 games, but didn't miss a chunk of the season to start. Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Well, let's hang there for a second.
Okay.
Because I think there's a lot of things we could talk about with the Clippers, but I think if you kind of peel the curtain back or look at the bigger picture, this is kind of where we're at. The top teams in the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. They got an identity and they got a winning formula. And so what is the one thing that those teams do consistently every single night? Can we answer that question with this version of the Los Angeles Clippers? I'm not certain. What is your winning formula as a team? How do you tweak it without losing it completely? And then how do you enhance it without becoming something different? You go one step too far and you open up a whole set of issues you weren't expecting. I kind of think the Clippers are there. Not necessarily totally their fault, but winning's hard. Sustaining winning is hard. You're trying to tweak. But this is a team that, if we were to say we knew one thing about the Clippers, playoff intrigue, superstar play, defense and a version of versatility because they could always go small and they had wings. Okay, let's build on that, right? Because they were third in defensive rating last year. They're 24th this year.
Yeah.
That's not part of the program. And this is the dangerous part in the league is you copy and paste. You assume something is going to continue to succeed. And we take our defense, we lock that in. We have that. We're good. We have James Harden playing at a high level still, and we have more players around him in theory to make it easier. We have depth in case we need to make it easier on Kawhi as well, but hopefully he'll be healthier. And now we're going to build on top of what we did last year. Here's the issue, right? You mentioned Kawhi playing 12 games. The Clippers have played 22 games, correct? Mm-hmm. Can you name the four players that have played 20 or more games?
Probably not. I'll bet in Harden, Zubats. I'd say Chris Dunn would be one of four.
You're three for three. You only need one more.
And I'm trying to think. Have we had a Batum absence yet?
Batum is the fourth. Those are the four. Well done. Bradley Beal, hurt. Bogdanovich played nine games in and out. Derrick Jones Jr. gets hurt. Brooke Lopez has been out of the rotation for at least 12 days. And now Chris Paul is gone. There's your depth.
Yeah.
So now you take last year's formula, the defense off the table, this depth off the table, and what do we have? This.
Yeah. It is James Harden doing his best, at least offensively. Kawhi Leonard making all the shots, but like it's not like we've gotten the A-plus version of Kawhi Leonard defensively to add to like the super two-way mystique. Like, not that that's all his fault. He's also working himself still into a rhythm. He's certainly established a strong one at this point, but again, like he hasn't been there all year. And so to your depth points, Steve, to bounce off of that, this was one of the things that I was primarily excited about with this Clippers group heading into the year. I thought they were going to be able to build on, hey, because they didn't have Kawhi a ton last regular season. It's like, hey, they're still able to win these games anyway. Now you have more options to play with. So if you do have guys missing time, you have better options to fill in, but you also just have more options to kind of plug and play. And so that was in my mind where you would get kind of the counterbalance. And to your point, like they just have not had that. Like, with Bill and Bogdanovich in particular, it's just like you even more so feel the absence of Norman Powell right now. Because like you just do not have anyone that can replicate that volume of scoring, that type of scoring, the overall athleticism that he has. Let's say the best overall athlete on your roster may still just be Derrick Jones Jr. And as you mentioned, he's out. And that's a big piece of the defense that they haven't had this year. And it all just kind of snowballs together. Like, I think with the defense in particular, there is certainly some effort stuff that I can poke to. And, like, you really feel that plus communication, you can really feel that with the transition defense that has just been bad pretty much all year long. But even structurally, and this is why one of the reasons why earlier in the year I was clamoring, hey, get Chris Dunn back in the starting lineup. Like, let's help establish some kind of foundation. Like, with the guys that are plugging in, this wasn't a group that could switch as often as they did last year. And flow into some of the like late switches with Zubats like they were able to last season because of some of the guards that you had in the rotation early on. And so if the navigation isn't there, you are now trying to have Zubats anchor more things, or we have to have him up at the level a little bit more. If the rotations behind him aren't clean, then what does that open up? And now it's this offense trying to set up shop against more set defenses. James Harden has been game. But, like, that's a lot of strain and a lot of burden on James Harden to carry, particularly during that stretch when Kawhi Leonard was out. And then I get to Nakia's brain, like, okay, I am enjoying what James Harden is doing as a scorer, like something that we both talked about earlier in the year. Hey, the drive seemed to be back a little bit compared to what we've seen in previous seasons. But, like, it still isn't, like, a shade level of volume for the drives for James Harden. And if James Harden isn't getting to the rim, who is with this group? Like, who's tilting the outside of James, who's tilting the defense enough to where some of these other guys can attack? Because you're not getting stops, you're not getting the transition / early offense stuff to make that easier for everyone. And so this is where, despite James Harden having the year that he's had, despite Ivica Zubac still, like, technically being one of the most efficient post scorers we have in the league, like, it doesn't actually break defenses the way that you need it to. And this is on top of the Clippers haven't shot the ball as well as at least I thought they would from deep. Like, I do think there's going to be some normalization that happens moving forward this year. But like all of that kind of fits in together. And to your broader point, like that's where you just don't know from night to night, what exactly are you getting from this group?
Well, you put the whole pie together there, Nekias. So let's try and break it apart piece by piece. Number one, the transition defense is not good. They do not score in transition. They're 28th in fast break points. They are 29th in opponent fast break points. So they're not getting easy baskets, and their opponents are getting easy baskets, and that's not good. The issue, everyone wants to kind of just look at the roster and point to age and say, oh, they're old, you can run on them. I wish it was that. If you look at the tape, this is not a connected group in transition.
Yeah.
There are so many odd little tiny mistakes. Kawhi Leonard and Zubac are great defenders, usually pretty connected. They have at least two errors in transition a game where, okay, I got you. I don't know. I'm going to take this guy. Someone's open.
Zubac just, and if you look, just run to the paint real quick. And
If you watch them, they have a combination of, okay, someone, they don't all get back and they're not loaded up. Someone drives. Then the next time someone drives, people are like, oh, we got to help. Now it's a kick. You got to take that off the table. So the transition is one thing. To your defense point in the half court, it's built on Zubac being a certain way defensively. He takes a hit or takes a slip. It's tough. So now his late switches, which he still makes in, they don't have the same impact. Are you clean on all the other switches? Is he able to close out and get back to the level? Is he working on protecting the paint and transition and getting back out? It all kind of unravels because they haven't really been consistently connected on that end of the floor. Mm-hmm. Watch a Clippers game. When there's a foul call, watch the body language. Look at it. Tell me what you see. How many people are clapping? Who's talking to each other? What is that? How are you going to respond to that? It also kind of ties into how many of these guys have had a season like this before?
That's a fair one.
Playing through adversity is one thing. Losing is hard. Mm-hmm. Not everyone's built to figure out how to do it. I'm not saying these guys aren't, but it's not easy. They have six losses, I believe, of 5 points or less on top of the blowouts. There's not one thing they can point to, which I think has probably been the issue.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's fair. And like, we got what the recent comments from James Harden, where he's like, I've never had a season like this before, to your point. And then you realize, like, oh, snap, he's just literally always had winning seasons. Like, literally always. This is different. And this is with him, again, carrying this kind of offensive burden. So, like, on one hand, one, it's just a lot easier for me with microphone to say, hey, this team needs to do this better without actually having to do it. So, like, duh. But, like, I would imagine with James Harden in particular, does he want to hear about transition defense effort when he is carrying a superstar load offensively right now? Like, probably not. Like, obviously, I can't speak for him. But I'm just saying, I would imagine that would be a... Yeah, man, I can do this better. Also, do you see what I am doing every night and how often I am getting two on the ball when we get into some of these hybrid second units? Because defenses do not care about some of the players that I'm playing with right now. Don't talk to me before you talk to them. So, like, I can see how that could get a bit hazy. But, like, I do wonder... And what I really want to get into, like, how much of this is actually salvageable? Because, like, you watch the Hawks game, and the Hawks were missing folks. So, like, not going to put that in the A-plus tier of wins. But, like, I think from a morale standpoint, they certainly needed that after all the Chris Paul stuff comes out.
But like, anyway, that's fair to say. Any win is an A-plus tier win for the Clippers right now. What you mean?
Well, that's probably fair, considering where they are in the standings. But you know what I mean. Like, is this signature win, is this beating the Thunder on the road? Like, it's not that. But, like, they needed the win. One, with where they are in the standings, to your point. Two, after all of that coming out and Ty Lue having to be asked about it pregame. Yeah, like, let's buckle in and let's just get what we can and beat who's in front of us. So encouraging to see that. Encouraging to see some of the defense perk up in that game. And, like, if they can establish that portion of the program, because, like, looking at some of their numbers from this year compared to last year, them turning the ball over offensively, like, that's not new for this version of the Clippers is not new for a Ty Lue team. Obviously, you don't want to turn it over, but they've generally been like middle of the pack to like bottom 10 in offensive turnover rate. The big thing last year, they were the best defensive rebounding team in basketball. We already mentioned some of the scheme versatility they could tap into last year. And they were top 10 in like opponent turnover rate. They forced a bunch, which again bleeds into we can get easy baskets to help settle us. Or even if it's not just immediate hit ahead for fast break layup, we can at least get into some early flow where the defense is a set and we can get easy looks from there. Like the fact that they are still turning the ball over, they weren't a high offensive rebounding team last year and they're not again this year, which is like fine structurally. But it's that plus we're losing the battle on the other end. Like that's not a formula that's going to work for them. And so I do just wonder as we're seeing the Kobe's are getting playing time, are they able to find some sort of base defensively? Is that the easiest way for them to kind of get out of this rut? Or do you think it is some kind of lineup tweak or usage tweak or usage tweaks offensively? And it's no. Okay, we just had, okay.
It's gonna be I'm going to stop you right there, brother. It's the defense. It's the defense. It's the number one thing that stood out to me. And you go back to the Atlanta game, early in that Atlanta game, you saw more of an effort. You saw multiple efforts. You saw a drive against John Collins, Chris Dunn sees that he takes that he contests. They weren't doing that consistently. It's about doing the little things defensively for this team because this team is not built to be bad on defense. There are certain teams who cannot survive being bad on defense. There are some teams like can't survive being bad on offense. Clippers can probably survive. We've seen it. We can figure it out offensively if we have more wiggle room. We have to get stops. Yep. How many times have we been able to see them consistently make those type of plays? But you see the Atlanta game, James Harden understanding, okay, I'm going under. You're seeing more of them flying around. You're seeing multiple efforts. Contrast watching the Cleveland game or the Miami game with what you saw against Atlanta. That's a good thing. Cleveland has not been able to drive the basketball for the majority of the season. They've been taking threes they don't want to take. Against the Los Angeles Clippers, guess what you saw Cleveland doing? Driving kick.
All the drives. Yeah.
You go to the Atlanta game, okay, James Harden's mixing in under. It's not an automatic switch. We're not putting two on the ball. Kawhi sees a drive. He gets the steal. They look different. So they're going to have to commit to playing defense and sustaining defense, not just guarding the initial action, having a stronger base, keeping the ball in front, helping each other. If they can do that, that's going to give them an opportunity because they've competed in these games. They've had close losses. They've had leads. They haven't been able to finish. And so they're going to have to take it one step at a time, one game at a time. Now, the positive for the Clippers is the current state of the West playing. You put a good week together, you put yourself in a spot where, okay, we can compete a little bit. We've seen Dallas turn things around a little bit. Hey, here's a little zone. Here's Cooper Flagg driving. We're attacking matchups. Here's Ryan Nembhard. Okay, we got a little something. They have to find something. And I think that something has to come on the defensive end first.
Okay. No, I think that's fair. I would say just quickly as, I guess just to add to the point, I feel like it is going to be tough for them to find it during this stretch, not impossible. And again, if they are able to figure it out, they're going to be in a much better position. You already mentioned where they are in the standings and what the play-in looks like right now. Have you seen their next 10 games?
Why are you taking my bit?
I'm trying to learn from you.
No, I haven't. What do we have?
Oh, boy. So and these 10 games takes you through the end of 2025. Then the next game after that would be literally on January 1st. But so we're recording on a Friday morning. So later tonight at Memphis, and we just talked about how well they're playing, at Minnesota tomorrow on Saturday, and then a little bit of a break since we have some NBA Cup action happening, quarterfinals, all that good stuff next week. At Houston on December 11th. Home against the Memphis Grizzlies on December 15th, which coincidentally, that is the day that Chris Paul and others are eligible to be traded. At OKC on December 17th. Home against the Lakers on December 20th. Home against the Rockets on December 23rd. At Portland on December 26th, day after Christmas. And then you close with a home game. Home against Detroit on the 28th, and then home against Sacramento on the 30th. It's not a lot of gimmies in that stretch. Again, not impossible.
I'm going to raise my hand and give an alternate thought.
Okay.
I don't think this is the worst thing in the world for them. Might not win a lot, but
they have to lock it.
You have no choice. Your season is on the line. You've lost entirely too many games, more than you thought you could, and you got to lock in. And some of these teams are teams, hey, we beat Memphis a couple times. We get Portland, but we can climb a little bit. But now you got to test yourself and see what you got. This is it. This is the stretch. Mm-hmm. Who are you? Are you what you think you can be? Or is the truth already what we've seen? And so sometimes these type of events can be a galvanizing moment for a team. Like when I saw, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about Chris Paul, but when I saw that the Clippers were stuck in the airport travel problems, I was like, oh, they're going to beat Atlanta. It makes no sense. I have no, like, gut. It's just gut feeling. Shared experiences can sometimes bring a team together. So let's see if that turns into something and they can put some games together. You're on the road. You got to figure it out. Let's see what it does.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a clean transition point, honestly. Quickly on the Chris Paul front, then I was just, more than anything, I just couldn't believe that that happened at that time, and I woke up to that.
Oh, you're already going to Chris Paul? Oh, okay. All right. No, okay.
No, that one just threw me off. I guess before getting into the Chris Paul portion of it then, what is there anything else that you wanted to hit on in regards to the Clippers' performance? I don't, like, all serious, I don't want to cut you off.
So, I mean, they just need to change or flip one thing in the formula, if we're being honest. You can't be the team that plays slow, struggles to get stops, and struggles with transition defense. That's just going to put you in a loop. You got to find a way to get some easy ones. You got to find a way to get some stops. You got to find a way to play better. You got to see what we can get out of Zubac. His growth last year was fantastic. You look, stat line looks similar. The hooks aren't necessarily hitting in the same way they were last year.
No.
And so you talk about half-court offense, that kind of used to be an automatic. Okay, we can go ahead and get Zoo. You want to switch? Let's get him a post up. Okay. Well, his role is getting more help. He takes a dribble on that short roll. Another person's there. Mm-hmm. Pushing the catches out further. Okay, so this is not the automatic that we had last year. Still good finishing the restricted area. But if you look at different areas of the court, not as strong as it was last year. Mm-hmm. More in the 40s than the 50s shooting-wise. They kind of need that to come back. Mm-hmm. Who's creating outside of James Harden? They average 24 assists tonight. James averages 8.4. You could do the math. So what kind of offense are we going to get? But if you got a healthy Kawhi, you got James Harden, then you give yourself a shot. You got some more youth in the rotation, so hopefully that should give you something as far as juice goes. Mm-hmm. And that's where it is. I mean, the one thing, the funny part is we talk about their defense being bad. Last year they were sixth in the NBA in opponent points in the paint. They're seventh this year. Mm-hmm. That's still there. Problem is everything else. Are you keeping the ball in front? Are you helping each other? They are 28th in opponents' 3 points made, and they are 29th in opponent 3-point percentage. Only the Hornets have had teams shoot better from three than the Los Angeles Clippers. And I didn't mean to throw any shade towards anyone in Charlotte, my fault, but it's true.
Hey, listen, they have been, it's not going to be Hornets corner, but yeah, they've been an interesting help defense this year. Let me tell you that. That is a stat that makes sense to me when watching the Hornets, but continue.
No, but yeah, I mean, I think that's just, it's more, can you get some flashes? Can you get some group effort? Can you find a way to feel better about what you're doing every single night? I think Kawhi being back helps. James's play helps. And now you just got to find a way to get some belief back in the building and see what comes from that. You know, I think, you know, do the Kobe's give them a pop? Is it John Collins? Which, poor John Collins. I looked up, man. They run staggers for John Collins. I'm like, that's not Norman Powell. Mm-hmm. That's John Collins. Anyways, continue.
No, that's honestly what I wanted to ask you about. Because I've felt very weird about this John Collins season. Because, like, especially earlier in this year, it felt like he was one of four players actually playing well for the Clippers. And so, like, I didn't want to give actual criticism. But it's kind of felt like the John Collins scoring in particular has just kind of come in a vacuum. Like, you make the stagger point, and I'm just like, hey, so what exactly is this opening up? Like, you're on a stagger for Norm. Like, they're obviously different players. Norm Powell's been fantastic in Miami, et cetera. But, like, even just that particular action, you run Norman Powell off of a stagger, there is just a level of angst that you feel. If we're not up, or if we're not switching all of this cleanly, he is going to pull for a three or going to curl and drive immediately. And with John Collins, like, in a literal sense, like, he is a guy that can knock down above the break threes. the drives have been, we're deep enough in this pod. It depends on what night you catch them on. I will put it that way. It's just not the same. And thus, like, you're not getting the same defensive attention, and thus you're not getting the same tilting of the defense, and you're not getting the same opportunities elsewhere. So I just kind of wonder, like, are there ways to get John Collins more threatening looks? Like, can he grease the wheels for this half-court offense? Because, like, he hasn't been bad to me. But, like, it also feels like defense is like, okay, that's cool.
Well, I mean, that's been the John Collins context.
Yeah.
He plays well. He's in a context where defense is like, fine. We're switching everything anyways. And now, because of the absences, right, the John Collins scoring in a vacuum would be fantastic if you had the guard you're supposed to have in the lineup. Mm-hmm. He's now filling that void. So it feels a little bit different when he's scoring. They still need his scoring. They need him to be aggressive. They need him to take shots. He's got to continue to do what he does. But because they don't necessarily, they haven't had Zubac at a certain level, they haven't had the guard play, it feels a little different. But I think that's just up to the context. I mean, this is a team that it doesn't matter who you put in a stagger, right? They're going to deny, even if it's Kawhi, he gets to Atlanta. Okay, we're going to deny you off the screen. We're going to take 4 seconds to try and get you a catch, and now we're going to recover. So teams are, they're trying to get to movement. It's not necessarily the fastest, but they're trying to get some movement in the half court. Teams are physical, bumping them off cuts, switching, keep it in front, keeps you out of paint. So how much of that is John Collins, and how much of that is just the context of the Los Angeles Clippers right now? Not sure. It'd be great if they could probably get out. They'd probably love to get him at the five. Maybe they mix that in. Who knows? But
we're so back.
I mean, it's just, you know, when he gets a catch and he wants to drive, is Zubac posting up? Okay. You dump it to Zubac. Now defense comes help. Like, okay. What have we, what have we accomplished? How much of that is just defense is saying, whatever, man. We just need one of these three players to be bad. And you have a blast.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting down, all right. We take Zoo away. We make it tough on Kawhi. Or we make James Harden miss shots, which sounds crazy. Two of those three are probably going to hurt you. You just don't want to be Zubac as well.
Oh, well, that's fair. I love that we are in round 87 of how much John Collins at the five can we get to fully maximize what he does offensively. And to your point, like, that's not all his fault. But, like, yeah, it's a funny one. And I'll once again say, like, I think I said this last year when the Clippers were good. Like, they just have so much low-hanging fruit in terms of when they get into their stuff. 28th in average time to cross half court. 30th in average time to their first action. Like, literally jog the ball up the floor sometimes. Like, this is not a Clippers group. They are seeing, like, more, just looking it up, they have seen more, like, backcourt pressure than they have in previous years. So, like, that is a factor. But, like, literally get the ball up the floor earlier. And that should help the offense a little bit. Like, I think in light of what this defense has been so far, like, they need to win whatever margins they can. And honestly, like, a straight thought that I had, particularly watching the Atlanta game, and just kind of thinking about the Clippers at large, is like, at what point does, like, I would imagine Ty Lue doesn't feel like he can afford to, like, press the let's crash the offensive glass more, but because of what the transition defense has been. But, like, if it's going to be this, like, do you just take your bites at the apple? Like, okay, well, let's send the Kobe's when they're in. Let's do something to try to swing some of this in our favor. Get some extra opportunities. What's up?
What's up this apple thing, man?
It's the phrase of the week for me. We're going to have something different next week. But also, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, Steve. You know, learned it early.
Continue.
All right. But no, like, I was just kind of having, like, the transition defense versus crashing the offensive glass thing battle. Because, like, offensive rebound rate is just up across the league. And the Clippers are one of the few teams that are like, nah, we're still just going to try to prioritize getting back. And as you mentioned earlier, the getting back portion hasn't always been super clean.
Yeah, okay. One, who are you nominating to crash the glass? And two, if they already are not doing a good job of getting back, how are we feeling this is a positive thing?
Yeah. Yeah. And see, and this is why I have the microphone and not a clipboard. You know, this is just a thought that I had, just trying to think through. But no, that, like, I was wondering, do you attempt that, even if that's just like a lineup specific thing, like with this group, when we have the younger athletes in, can we afford to get more aggressive on the offensive glass? So that was just a thought that I had. Okay.
So are you ready to talk about the legendary Chris Paul? Are you prepared for this? Is this why we're here again in Clipperland? No.
You know, I'm going to be more regulated today, especially since we're deep enough into Clipper talk. What a way for this to end. It's unfortunate that it's ended this way. And like you get to like the Chris Haynes reports and, you know, mention again, the Clippers being stuck at the Miami airport because of the plane issues and things like that. And when the meeting starts and stuff, you get the report that Chris Paul, I think weeks ago, wanted to have a meeting with Ty Lue, and apparently that didn't happen. We eventually get the moves announced, and Lawrence Frank speaks to media. He's like, hey, want to be clear, we're not scapegoating Chris. He is still a legend in the game, a legend for us. We appreciate him. This just wasn't the right fit. We didn't get a bunch of particulars into, okay, why was this not the right fit? Because I don't think we don't get to you are away from the team if it was just because he hasn't been an efficient scorer and the defense is what it is as a small guard at 40. If it was only on-court stuff, I don't think we are here, nor do we get that meeting at like 11 and Chris Paul IG post at like 2:40 something. We get this other stuff. So like I do just kind of wonder what had to have been said, or how consistently was it being said for us to reach this point before Christmas, before unofficial trade day, for that matter. And so like that one surprised me. Two, threw me off as someone that is just generally a big fan of Chris Paul. Like, this is supposed to be the swan song. I said during my rant, literally earlier this week, this can't be the Chris Paul swan song. And the Clippers apparently just said, all right, bet, it won't be. And now here we are. So just on a base level, this stinks. And I do wonder what else comes out from this. And then from there, where does he go from here in a literal sense? Because I don't think he wants, like, just his entire season to just end here. And this is just the last that we see of Chris Paul. But you also scan the landscape, like who could use either a backup point guard or just a third guard that can serve as mentor / here's some spot minutes here or there. Is this a tough time for all of this to happen? And so like that's where I'm just kind of like, this stinks. It's one of the greatest point guards of all time.
Yeah, it's I mean, there's a lot of speculation out there. And you know me, I don't really enjoy the hashtag reckless speculation. But if you piece some things together or you try and sift through it, this is one of those things where, okay, how much of this was just our context got very bad? We gave you this specific role. We are not playing well. This is a harder role for you to swallow, but it is also harder for us to deal with this portion of the program. Mm-hmm. And how quickly does this become two sides feel a way and feel justified in that department? Mm-hmm. It's a funny thing about life, right? There can be a discord or a disagreement, but if two sides feel justified in their decision-making, where do we go from there? Mm-hmm. When you're playing off the bench, it gets tricky. Like accolades are accolades. Legendary, first ballot, Hall of Famer. When you're playing off the bench, actions. Actually, you know what? It's life too. Actions are going to always be stronger than words. Words are easy to say. Mm-hmm. But do you embody them? Do you live them every single day? Mm-hmm. And are you ready for the perception? Nothing you can do about that. Just got to be your best self. But can you consistently, you know, are you uplifting? Are you gathering? Are you uplifting the team when you're on the sideline? What is your role? What's your body language looking like? Did you see the Cavs game, Nikash?
I did not.
You didn't see the Cavs Clippers game?
Did not.
Okay, so Chris Paul comes in the game. Mm-hmm. They run a double pick and roll. He gets to James Harden with 11 on the clock. And then just goes to the wing. There's next time down, he's in the corner. Looks like they're going to set a stagger for him. Doesn't move. Nick Batum comes off the screen. They run stacked pick and roll. Say Brooke Lopez is the first screener. James Harden's at the nail. Mobley comes to the level. Paul's getting pressured. Chris Paul takes one dribble, and then tries to fire it at Brook Lopez. Only Dean Wade is just standing there. Mm-hmm. Start the second quarter. Evan Mobley looks to attack Batum one-on-one. Chris Paul sees it. Smart basketball player. Tries to sit on it. The spin move. Doesn't get it. Mobley sees him. Kick the three. No one rotates behind him. Mm-hmm. These are the moments where you can have a two-sides deal. Mm-hmm. Hey, why aren't we doing XYZ? Hey, man, what are you doing?
That's fair.
This is the thing about the world of basketball. It's very much a what have you done for me lately type business. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for guys to listen if you are not embodying what you're saying, especially if you're playing. Why are you talking to me about defense?
Yeah.
What are you talking about body language? What are you? And this is beyond just Chris Paul. I'm just talking now.
No, you did.
But what does that open up? Mm-hmm. How is that received? Who grumbles? How much grumbling do we have? Gets tricky. Mm-hmm. There's another play in the Cleveland game. It's like a wide pin down for Kawhi. His man helped off Chris Paul. Chris got to the wing. Kawhi got it right to him. He held it for like two or three seconds and then just swung it to Batum in the corner. I'm like,
what is this?
But then he came off next time and I got a dribble handoff right at the nail, made a play. And I'm like, that's Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. Sometimes things don't fit. Things don't vibe. And if you have someone who's accepted a role, doesn't really love it, maybe, mm-hmm. it's not going great around it. And now what am I supposed to do here?
Yeah.
And I this is how I know how to get people to win. It's hard to do that when you aren't out there every single night. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If I sit here and I were to correct you on the pod, but I only show up once a week, it's not gonna have the same impact, right? Mm-hmm. That's beyond Chris Paul, but it's just like, okay, in one ear out the other. When I was a coach, I had to be on my P's and Q's. I had to know what I was talking about. So I'm going to say something to you. I got to have conviction with it and knowledge. Yep. Doesn't mean I'd be perfect. That's a lesson for everyone. You don't have to be perfect. Just give your best. But I had to know. If you are someone who has not put the work in and then you deliver opinion, it's going to come very clear that you didn't really, what do you mean? That mm-hmm. guy's averaging 20 over the last five games. What are you talking about? Force him left. He likes to go left. Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my Chris Paul adjacent rant because who knows what actually happened. Mm-hmm. But this stuff happens in basketball. Discontent exists. Losing stinks.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's all fair. Like I think there is a level of if you're not directly helping this, why am I hearing all of this? And like this, you know, as much as I love Chris Paul, and Steve pokes at me for how much I love Chris Paul, like I, you know, long-term dunkers remember like the family member reference from like 2-3 years ago on the pod. But like, he is a very particular personality. And so like, you can offset some of that when you are, you know, at the peak of your powers, the best point guard in basketball. Or you decline a little bit, you're still an all-NBA type player. Or you decline a little bit and you're like French all-star level. Or even last year's Spurs, where he plays all 82 and the Spurs win his minutes and all this. And it's like, okay, he's not the same Chris Paul, of course. But like, this is still a productive NBA player that you can win minutes with and ultimately win games with. If it is now this version of Chris Paul, hey, man, I don't really want to... Not from you. It, like, I can understand, like, how people get there. And even if you just broaden the strokes of the Clippers roster right now, we talked earlier, there's no Bradley Beal, there hasn't been much Bogdan, et cetera. Like, they do just kind of need legitimate juice in the guard room. Like, they need... like, there's just a basketball argument to make that, like, we don't need the type of player that Chris Paul is, who is more so, I can set you up. If I have space at the elbows, I can knock these down all day. He hasn't knocked them down this so far this year, but just in general, he's a more selective scorer by nature.
Yeah, it's hard for the data collect in 13, 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Continue. Didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no. But that's the point. That's part of the point I want to make. Like, no, like, they kind of just need someone that can get buckets and force defenses to move in a different way, especially in those minutes without James Harden, where the Clippers have been blitzed pretty much all year long when clearing Harden goes to the bench, because nobody else can garner that type of attention. And again, I'm not expecting Chris Paul to be a James Harden level creator at this stage, because of course not. But, like, you know, the point that you have consistently made with Chris Paul over the past few years, even with him being productive, teams still feel like, okay, we can, here's drop or here's a switch, do something about it. Versus we got to put two on the ball against Chris Paul because he's torching us. And so, like, yeah.
I also think, you know, especially towards the latter run, it's okay, I'm with the second unit, but Kawhi and Zubac are out here. So I'm giving them the ball and now I'm spacing. I feel like there was a push pull there as well. How much pick and roll was there really going to be? How much dribble handoff? How much of the Chris Paul stuff was going to be there? And then two, like, just the locker room portion of it. I have a great deal of respect for Chris Paul. I don't know if the Clippers handled it the best way as far as the end goes with the fights and the hours and all that good stuff. That doesn't smell great.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably different for Chris Paul to be Chris Paul in a younger locker room and be able to mentor while also still being Chris Paul, and Chris Paul being in a locker room full of pros. Mm-hmm. It's an older team. Hey, why are y'all doing this? Right?
Yeah.
So this is where it's like, okay, both sides have an idea and a vision. Okay, this is not working. Sometimes it's best to walk away and agree to disagree. But yeah, man, buddy, you've been in the league for 8 years. Why are we doing this in transition? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And fire back. Well, you've been in the league for 20. Why you can't? Just like, huh?
Who knows, man?
Yeah. So I guess the last thing for me, if it's not the end for Chris Paul, are there any landing spots in your mind, Steve, that make sense for Chris Paul?
The Los Angeles Lakers.
That's just the one for you, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then you got to move.
Well, there's also that. Yeah, that seems pretty convenient. There's the obvious connection with LeBron there. Because I was, like, going through teams yesterday. I'm just like, man, like, on one hand, it's easy to kind of drum up Chris Paul's stuff because he's just on the minimum. And, like, every team has a minimum or minimums at the end of their bench if you want to just get a swap going after December 15th. But it's also like, okay, who has a roster spot? And if you have the roster spot, do you have, like, the playing time? And if you don't have the playing time, is this, like, a clear-cut, like, mentorship bit for Chris Paul? Is he open to that? Are your young guys receptive to having that? Or do you already have a vet on the roster? So it's just like, ah, this does get kind of funny. So, like, I had the Lakers as a team on my list.
Okay. But,
like, we already had some reporting where it's like, well, the Lakers may not be all that interested unless something drastic changes. It's like, okay, well, I can see why that may not be the case. Like, if Marcus Smart comes back healthy, like, that's guard minutes. You already have Gabe Vincent. In terms of just overall creation, you do just have LeBron and Luka and Austin Reeves. So it's not like they need another guy to shepherd offense for you. I think we talked about this a little bit in the watch party yesterday, but, like, the Hornets are actually an interesting one. If it's to get him back to NC, played at Wake Forest, obviously, but, like, get him back to NC. Like, is there something there for, even if it's not LaMelo, just veteran guard in the room with some of the ball handlers that they have? That could make some sense to me, for me. I'll toss this one to you. Like, how would you feel about a Pelicans return? This was also broached, but, like,
no.
Is that just a firm no for you?
Yeah. Okay. We don't need that in the blender.
Okay, fair enough. you know what? Okay. Fair enough. And so, like, if we're saying no to the Pelicans, like, the Thunder one would just be funny for, like, six different reasons. But, like, they don't have the roster spot. I don't think they're concocting a trade just to get him in the room. So, like, that's
okay.
A no.
Okay. Who else is on this list?
That one got you. How would you feel about Boston?
Why? What's he going to do there?
This is more like him and Joe Mazzulla in the same locker room. Just, it feels like they would vibe.
Does that sound like a good idea?
Maybe.
Does anyone need that?
Probably not. That's fine.
Like, those was that the final one?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you're not doing that for Detroit, I don't think. That would be a funny locker room, though. But like I don't think you're doing that with Detroit. Because the other thing I was thinking about is, like, because Chris Paul's making the minimum, if it's Chris Paul plus insert salary here to get something in the room, like, is there something to build if you're the Clippers? Like, this is not, obviously not, like, high trade value stuff. But they do have salaries if they want to try to bring some creation in the room somewhere. But, yeah, it's, I don't know. I do hope his season did not end on December 3rd. Like, I just don't want that for him.
I understand.
He's been too good, been too long for that to be a bit.
I understand. And it looks like the buck is going to stop there. But don't you worry. We'll be back after this break to talk about the Bucks.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. We have Giannis news, not the news that I was anticipating, twofold at this point. So we got early Wednesday that Giannis and his agent slash representation were prepared to have more discussions about his future, which is, I guess, a continuation of the discussions that were going to happen this summer and circling further back, I suppose, but just a lot of talking. It's like, okay. Then we get into game time, and 3 minutes in, Giannis goes down. And no one was around Giannis when he went down, which scared me and imagined lots of basketball fans immensely when this happens. But we do get the report. He expected to miss 2 to 4 weeks with a right calf strain. And so before even getting into, like, the Giannis noise, one, I just hope he's okay and will fully recover. Because the lower body injuries, luckily, it hasn't been anything super serious, but it just feels like those are just kind of stacking up over the past 3 or 4 seasons. And as you were talking about Giannis moving forward and what that looks like, I feel like it's valid to be a little concerned about that. Like, it would be more concerning to me if it was like, okay, he is having these, there's an issue with the exact same knee every year. Like, it's not that, thank goodness. But I don't know. Lower body stuff just scares me with basketball players. And with someone like Giannis that generates so much power from his base, with him being just the biggest rim force we have in the league still, and him putting up another MVP caliber season if the Bucks were winning a little bit more, et cetera. Like, I just want Giannis to be good. But that's top of mind for me. Related to that, if we are about to have another 2 week or potentially month stretch without Giannis for the Milwaukee Bucks, what is this about to look like for them? Because as of recording, they are 1-5 in games that Giannis didn't appear in. Again, played 3 minutes against Detroit, and they ultimately end up winning that game. Heck of a fourth quarter for them in particular there. But, like, I am curious to see, like, what the offense generation is going to look like during this stretch. I would imagine it's going to be a lot more on the plate of Ryan Rollins again, who has been game. But I think something that you pointed out before, Steve, like, seeing a little bit more high ball pressure, a little bit more defensive attention to him naturally with Giannis out of the lineup. They have got some guard help as of late. Shoot the leather out the ball right now. But, like, the spotlight naturally goes to Ryan Rollins there. So I guess just in general, Steve, I'll pose to you, like, what do you expect this Bucks team to look like for the next month or so? Or are you concerned about their playoff hopes at all?
I'm concerned in that conference with the way that they are competing. But the fact is, they competed against the Detroit Pistons. And so in my eyes, this is a chance for them to kind of try and find a way to piece things together. And you're going to have to lock in on all the little things that Giannis may cover up. Miles Turner, you're going to have to do more. You know, AJ Green, this is your time. Ryan Rollins, continue to show up. They're going to have to just come together as a team, defend at a certain level. Offensively, you're going to have to move the ball and try and get after it. And you got to find a way to try and gut some wins out. You know, you got to try and chip away. There's no other thing you can do but focus in on what's happening right now. And if you look at their schedule, you got, you know, Philly, you got at Detroit, you got Boston, you got at Brooklyn, you got Toronto. Okay, that's about a good 13 days right there. That's 2 weeks. So what can we do during this time span to give ourselves a chance to win? Is it 3 out of 5? Can we go 3-2? Can we just take care of home? Maybe steal one on the road. We go 4-1 where we're static. So I think the mindset is you gotta have a good stretch here, because have you seen the end of their year? They play the Wizards on New Year's Eve, but they have a road trip from the 21st to the 20th, from the 21st to the 27th at Minnesota, at the Pacers, at Memphis, at Chicago, at Charlotte. winnable games. Some winnable games in there if you compete. So compete level's got to be high. Need Bobby Portis, Kyle Kuzma, Miles, come on down. Let's get some buckets. Let's play some defense. Let's figure it out.
Okay. I'm with you. Like, this does seem like one of the more manageable stretches that they are going to have this year. And so if you were going to have a, I guess, another Giannis absence, this seems like a more ideal time to have it. It just feels worse because of where they are in the standings and because of the ensuing, like, trade noise on top of this. So it's just like, oh, no. Now he's got to sit with this for X amount of time.
Look, hands, I don't know what's going on with the trade deal. I would just like to say, if you're out there and being like, man, I can't believe Milwaukee thought that they could just go get Miles Turner and they would just fix things. What were they going to do? The guy was hurt. What were they going to do? Just nothing? You would have been cool with nothing?
We just have the Damian Lillard roster spot that's just there. And not, like, I guess to that end, like, I do understand, like, the mechanisms used to create the room to get Miles Turner. Like, the risk was very apparent there. And so, like, I do understand people being on the other side of, well, I'm not doing all of that for this. Okay. But, like, to your overall point.
Yeah, who are you going to do it for then, buddy? Lopez. Who's your, you want Bobby as your starting center? What do you want?
It's time for more Jericho Sims. But no, like, okay. That's what I'm saying. Like, I do understand your overall point of, like, if you are in the keep Giannis business, you do have to make some swings. And we knew heading into the offseason, the Bucks did not have, you know, they don't have like a thunder stash of picks to add folks. They don't have like a ton of mid-tier salaries to cobble together to bring like a disgruntled all-star into the mix, et cetera. And so to your point, like, no, it wasn't going to be easy. Like, they didn't have a bunch of options available. Now, to the other side, maybe you were of the mind that, okay, because of the restriction they have, they should have just went straight to pressing the Giannis button. I think there is logic there. I also think that is a very, 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 very difficult thing to sell to the Milwaukee Bucks right now. You have literally one of the greatest players of all time on your roster. It is very difficult to say, you know what, we're going to be proactive about moving this person, even if there is logic behind it. Like, that's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. Because let me tell you, we've all lived life. We've all lived. There's some things you fight for forever. Mm-hmm. This guy's one of them.
No, that's fair. And so, yeah, like, this is quite literally the risk you run, where it's like, okay, we are going to try to keep this guy at all costs because look at how good he is. Look at what he's meant to this franchise. We're not that far removed from the championship with him dropping 50 in the closeout game, et cetera. Like, yeah, we want to make sure this guy, we are going to exhaust literally every option we have to keep this guy happy. It is unfortunate that, like, it's been, like, fine. It's been an uneven season for Miles Turner. And to your point, like, we have more Giannis injuries. So, like, you don't even really get the full, you know, you don't really know exactly what this is yet.
I understand that. I understand. You don't know what it is. But I will tell you what it is. And that is time for us to take a break. We will be back to talk about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot, and felt appropriate to get another player breakdown in. Y'all seem to like those. We enjoyed those. Steve, let's talk about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for a little bit.
Okay.
You may have heard the Oklahoma City Thunder are very good. They have lost once as of recording. Very much on a 70-plus win pace right now. They have been the most dominant defense in basketball again. They have been, I guess, flirting with a top-five offense at this point. Per cleaning the glass, because there are a lot of teams bunched up. I have a question for you on that front a little bit later. But elite offense, super elite defense. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been at the head of this particular snake offensively, at the very least. As of recording, a career-high 32.8 points per game. He's converting 59% of his twos, which is absurd considering the volume and the types of shots that he's taking inside the arc. Career-high 43% from three, Steve. on pretty real volume. Not Steph level, but it's not nothing. 88 from the line. He's getting to the line over 10 times a game. 5 boards, a career high 6.5 assists. And then, you know, a little over 2 stops per game, too, if we're talking about the defense. But to the offense point, man, Shai has long been one of my favorite players to watch. As you often poke at me when I talk about, like, deceleration and stuff like that, his footwork is just pristine. And the cadence in which he attacks continues to throw defenders off balance. And he continues to win these drives. Sometimes I'm just blowing right by you because you're not prepared. Other times you don't know how often I'm going to change directions, when I'm going to change directions. And he has the flexibility, the dexterity, all the things to like pivot into whatever he needs to. Like the fact that he can get to so many off-platform shots in the areas of the floor that he's able to get to, there isn't much you can do. Like he does such a good job of putting defenders in peril. And this is without a screen, more often than not. You add in the pick and roll play, you now have to navigate something from Isaiah Hartenstein, who's one of the best screeners in basketball. Now you're on his hip. This is how he gets to the line. Like, there's only so much you could do there. I'll let you jump in.
Well, no, I was going to say, I think the base of what Shai has presented, it started with the drives. He's added something every single year. But his ability to hit you with these straight line drives, like you talk about the setup, you talk about the ball handling, but when he gets right by that foot, and he through the legs, cross, hesitation, whatever it is, he gets right by that foot. His foot's right there. He's gone. He's right past you. Straight line. Mm-hmm. That's always been something that's been impressive about his ability to do that. So while I, you know, people want to talk about fouls, it's not easy to be able to create that kind of separation on drives. And when you talk about pick and roll, it's another thing he added to his game. So when I'm in a screen, I can come off that tight, and now I'm attacking a big with space. You know I can get to my shot whenever I want, whether it's a step back or a pull up, but I can also continue to turn the corner. Kind of ties into the improved playmaking this year. So where I don't know if Shai gets the type of credit as some of his peers at the top, right? Like Jokic, Luka, even LeBron. He's able to kind of see when there's help coming. He's making faster reads. He's understanding where the ball needs to go. And now you kind of have this combination of things that are just incredibly tough to deal with because you mentioned he's able to win so many different type of matchups. You succeed to stick with him, right? He gets that top foot. You're sliding as a defender. It's not like he's going all the way automatically. It's not like he's going at a million miles an hour, although he can change speeds. He changed speed well. He hits you with one of those little quick step backs, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now he beats you, gets a drive. Okay. And now this thing, and I don't mean to get ahead of myself, this step back three deal that he's just tossing in there. I want to say, like, Tyrone wants to talk about efficiency and percentages. I want you to pay attention to the timing of these because it's just a real quick sprinkle, a real dash. You know what I mean? Early in the clock, cool. I'm guarding Shai. I'm going to keep it in front. I got to worry about these drives. Nope. Real quick. Bop, bop. Step back three. Go ahead and nail it. There was a game off a May basket. Someone scored. They threw it ahead to Shai. He just went to the wing, took a step back three. He was like, wait. We're supposed to deal with all this other stuff. We're trying to load up help, and you're just knocking these down. Fourth quarter. All right. We're ready, Shai. Bop, three. Hey.
They cut that out.
Like, come on. Like, what are we doing? And so it adds layers to his game. And I think that he's a bucket getter with the type of shots that he can make. Like, do people understand? He's like, according to the NBA tracking data, he's shooting 54.8% on pull-up twos. You know how hard that is?
Incredible.
He's better than last year. He shot 50% last year. And he's shooting 45.3% on pull-up threes. That was 35 last year. It's not supposed to work. And obviously percentages may go down, but being able to have all of this in the, what do the kids call it? The bag?
What do the kids call it?
Kids really put you in a different stratosphere.
That is incredible. Like, I'm glad you brought up the off-the-dribble numbers because NBA data has like the all-encompassing kind of what are you shooting off the dribble. I wanted to filter specifically for the step backs because I knew if you didn't talk about it, I wanted to. Mm-hmm. So per second spectrum, 33 of 64 on step back threes. 51.6% as of recording. Now, do I think that percentage is sustainable? Like, no, it's very hard to hit over half of your step back threes. It is hard to hit a step back three, period. I don't think it's going to be this. But to your point about the timing and just the overall comfort of it all, like, that is what scares me the most about this addition to Shea's game. And again, like, this is like literally the first time he's taken step back threes. Like, go back to the 23-24 season, he was 62 of 160. I have in my notes about 39%. So he's had like a good year before, but like, he is taking more of them than he ever has, especially on like a per 100 possessions basis. And to your timing point, like, you just don't know when it's going to hit. Like, they just feel so backbreaking. This is why, like, he's taking, I mean, he's making 43% of his threes overall. Like, it's five attempts. That is solid. It's not like the Anthony Edwards leap where it's like, wait a minute, you're shooting 40% on like 11 threes. What is this? Like, he doesn't even need that. He just needs, to your point, like, the sprinkle of this. I just want you to know that I can do this when I want to. I'm still getting to mine. I've grown as a playmaker, so you can't shade a whole bunch of extra attention to me, not without feeling uncomfortable. And now you're backpedaling, waiting for this. Just because. And like, you really feel it, you get late in games. Like, we've talked about, you in particular brought up Shea sitting out a whole bunch of fourth quarters because the Thunder are just blowing people out, right? They're 9-1 in clutch time right now. And Shea just very rarely misses once we get the clutch time. And that's where you really feel some of those step back threes and off the dribble threes. It's like, wait, hold on, dog. We're under 2 minutes. So like, we either don't have a foul to give or we have exactly one. We got to deal with this dude driving. He can get to these pull up twos. Now here's the step back three. We can't give him drop. We can't give him switches. That ties into like, we'll use Shea as a screener to get some matchups if we want to, et cetera. We'll flatten the floor in terms of the spacing. And now you can't help if you want to. And if you do, it's an easy read for him. What are you supposed to do with this dude? Like, if this is who he is, if he has legitimately turned himself into a three-level scorer with like legit volume, more than like two elite levels, and then sometimes here's a three. If he's legitimately a three-level guy, good luck.
It's the command for me, just on top of what you said. It's the command of the game. Everyone who's picked up a ball has had a day when you know exactly what you can do. Doesn't matter what the defense, I can get to whatever spot I want, I can make whatever shot he was. He just does that like all the time. You know what I mean? It's kind of insane. Like, think about that. He scored, what, 20 or more in the 94 games?
Yeah, that's
second longest streak in NBA history. And he scored 30. 17 times in the first 20 games, most in the NBA. And he's only the second player in the last 50 years to do so through the first 20 games of the season. Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Kind of good, man.
All right. So quickly on the clutch stuff, Steve. So as of recording, 87 clutch points for Shea. That's first in the NBA. 61 on twos, 40% on threes, 84 from the line, which is a little bit below his level. But like 61 on twos, 40 on threes in clutch time is insane. 9 assists on 1 turnover. In clutch time. I mentioned they are 9-1 in the Shea clutch games. They have won those clutch minutes by 67 points. That's not how that's supposed to work. Also, to make you laugh, you know who's second in a clutch plus minus right now?
I don't know. Guy Santos.
No, but that would be funny. It's the Black Falcon himself, Harrison Barnes.
The what? Not again. All right.
There we go. Okay, but last things I wanted to hit on the Shea portion, like just to kind of build on a point that I've made earlier in the year about OKC. It is incredibly fun slash funny to me that they are set up in a way that as good as Shea is, he could just hit you second or third in a possession, especially since Jalen Williams, the wing, is back. To where we can have Jalen Williams initiate, or Cason Wallace initiate, or AJ Mitchell initiate, or Alex Caruso initiate, or Lu Dort, or one of those guys brings it up. Here's a flash to the middle of the floor for Isaiah Hartenstein, and they get into like handoff stuff. They can create good looks from that. And if that does not work, here's 12 seconds on the clock. Here's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, which like heightens the stressors of all of this stuff. Immediate step back three, immediate drive, which very quietly, drive volume actually down. Tracking data for Second Spectrum now goes back 6 years at this point. About 26 drives per 100 possession. That is the lowest of the six-season span for Shea. Also, the most efficient driving season of his career in terms of direct drive. So, like, yeah, you're feeling less, but you're feeling more at the same time. But, like, all that stuff is heightened because, like, you think there's six on the clock. Okay, I have time to contest this. Here's a pump fake for Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He's going to the free throw line. It's like, well, darn. What am I supposed to do with this now? That part is tough for me.
Oh, you said the thing. I thought we were going to get through the whole segment without saying that. Oh, well. Shout out in the comments. Oh, well, we tried our best. The biggest thing I would say is I think that ties into the Thunder being a machine so far, mm-hmm. because they've added that just it doesn't matter what you're doing defensively. We're going side to side. You can't really get us fully in the mud. You play zone, LOL. But, it, you know, being able to get him on the second side of an action mm-hmm. with, as you said, all of the things you're doing score-wise, but with that playmaking, because now you're either adjusting and being like, okay, we need to be up higher on the floor, two on the ball. Okay, I can make a play now. I can turn mm-hmm. the corner if you're back and engage the defense, and I can, that passing, those pocket passes, the kicks to Jalen Williams, big, have been fun to watch. So I think it all ties together, man.
I like it. And just quickly on that front, they're about 36 possessions per game. Where Shea is not the guy that brings the ball up the floor, but is still involved in an offensive possession. A little bit down from last year. But in terms of the types of shots that they are generating, this is the most efficient season of the last six for OKC in that setup. Kind of, again, highlights. We don't have to start with Shea. We can still end with Shea or use him in different ways. And we can put your defense in the blender. So this has been MVP level stuff for Shea. Like, I'd imagine it's going to be him and Jokic and Luka really battling this out. Like, that's got to be the top three in some order, I would imagine, especially since Giannis is going to miss more time, Wimby's out, et cetera. Shea has as good a chance as any to win this thing. He's my front runner right now. He's just been insane. He's been insane. Okay, Steve.
Well, you brought it up. So do you have any free throws?
That's such a good shot. Wow. Unbelievable. I sure do have free throws, Steve.
Wow.
I
sure do. A rarity.
Okay. Wowzers. All right, Steve. On the W side first. Okay. Scale of 1 to 10. What is your concern level with CBA negotiations right now?
Zero.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
Not okay. Concerned. Unbothered.
I respect it. I hope that you end up being proven correct and we get a deal done soon. What is a W player non-basketball collab that you'd like to see? And we just had, like, for an example, we just had Asia on Hot Ones last week, and that episode was hilarious.
Did you enjoy that?
It was pretty funny to me.
That's a good question. A Rhea Ripley, Stewie tag team would be fun.
Oh. Is this the Rhea stomp with Stewie just all the arms? Yeah. That'd be fire. Okay. Hey, why did Flage do that?
Summertime.
Tremendous work. So where are you on this year's most polarizing prospect, Lauren Betts?
Look, man, we gotta stop acting like bigs aren't bigs anymore. All right, let Lauren Betts cook. A lot of stuff will translate that you haven't thought about. Stop talking about the screening. It won't be doubled as much. Slides the puppies defensively, can block shots. You're gonna mess around and Lauren Betts is gonna end up on a very good team. You'll be mad because y'all talked bad about her for a whole season.
Oh, understood. Okay, another question I want to pose to you while we're on women's college basketball.
Hmm?
So how wild would it be to call Sarah Strong a top five prospect of the last decade?
I would like for you to not do that. That's a lot of talent. Top five of the last decade?
Yeah, so to give a little context here, here are the number one picks since 2016, right? In order, Breanna Stewart, Kelsey yeah. Plum,
okay.
Asia Wilson,
okay.
Jackie Young, Sabrina Ionescu, Charlie Collier, which, you know, okay, wow. Ryan Howard, Aaliyah Boston, Caitlin Clark, and Paige Beckers. And so I specify prospect because obviously, like, Asia's on a goat track right now. But, like, it's more so, like, coming into the league, how did you feel about X prospect? Can you get to top five or is that too hasty for you?
It's too hasty for me. I understand the enthusiasm, but we gotta, like, you do some quick research on some of the names you listed in college.
Oh yeah, like Kelsey Plum was the all-time leading scorer before Caitlin broke that. And
like we got triple
doubles. Asia won. Stewie had everything. Yeah,
we got triple doubles. Like we got a lot of stuff going on that mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to comfortably say that. And it's not like there were some good number two picks too.
That's true.
So yeah, I'm gonna pump the brakes on that one.
Okay, that's fair. All right, to the NBA side.
Yes.
Following LeBron's 10-point game streak, nearly 1,300 straight games in the regular season, with that streak ending, game-winning assist to Rui Hachimura, do we think anyone else will crack 1,000 straight games?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. Okay. Someone will do it.
Okay. Do you
will,
have a...
Will we be here? Maybe not, but someone will do it.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Oh, Jesus. All right. Who's your coach of the year favorite right now?
Oh, disgusting work at the end of a podcast by you, because there's so many good coaching jobs. Why would you do that? That's nasty. I think Mark Dadnall deserves a lot of respect. I think J.B. Bickerstaff deserves a lot of respect for what he's done. I think there's some sneaky cases for J.J. Redick and Ime Udoka and Mitch Johnson. And then I probably dash in a don't be surprised if Spo or Missoula get some love.
Okay.
It's going to take some standing shakeouts. It's an interesting coaching year because you have the dominance of the Thunder, but you also have quite a few of the, hey, didn't think y'all were going to do all this type beats.
Shout out Jordan Ott.
Yeah, Jordan Ott's up there too. My fault, Jordan. That's on me. But yeah. Yeah, it gets interesting.
Because critically, did you name a favorite? You're not getting out of here, buddy.
Yes, that's for you to figure out.
That's great. Steve Raines is insane. Okay, power rank these teams by how likely they'd actually be fine if they ever traded their high usage star. The Hawks with Trae Young. The Grizzlies with Ja Morant. The Heat with Tyler Hero. The Magic with Paolo Banchero.
So by the most, they'll be fine?
Or better, but I'm just saying, if they actually move those guys, move their top, that guy.
What was the third team again? Sorry.
Third team was Miami.
So Heat, one.
Okay.
Magic, four.
Okay.
Hawks, two. Who's the other team?
Grizzlies.
Grizzlies, three.
Okay. Got you, got you. All right, so we had had an ESPN article from Jamal Collier, I believe, on the Chicago Bulls, a whole bunch of stuff around the Anthony Davis of it all, et cetera. Do you think the Bulls should actually consider trading for Anthony Davis?
Had they not lost seven of their last 10 games, maybe.
Okay, that is a firm no for you right now.
I just... You're a lot closer to the Hornets than you want to be, I'm just saying, like... Not now.
Okay.
He lost his free throw.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, they just went away. I couldn't scroll. That's fair. But yeah, okay. They're back now. I was like, what?
Okay.
Blazes. All right. Okay, fair enough. All right, so Steve, there are 12 players as of recording.
Yes.
With an offensive EPM of at least one a defensive EPM of at least one.
Not the BPM, hold on, man.
We got 12 guys, plus one in both, right? Nemeas Cates is on this list. Reed Shepard's on this list. My question for you, are you more surprised by Nemeas Cates' offense or Reed Shepard's defense being good enough to clear his threshold?
I'm going to tell you very quickly that both of them being on this makes me not believe in this statistic in any way, shape, or fashion. And I'm going to leave it there. Because it's probably the young fella's defense. But I don't like anything about this. And some of you need to put the tabs down. You need to stop looking at these numbers on top of numbers, on top of numbers. You have too much data and you're not using it appropriately.
We heckin' got them, folks. All right, Steve, who do you have more belief in as of this recording? The Miami Heat or the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Oh, that's a good one. It's hard to count out Minnesota. Anthony Edwards is cooking. You should look up his clutch numbers. Still my clutch of the year, clutch player of the year pick. Miami. I'm going to go with the Minnesota Timberwolves. I have a strong belief in the Miami Heat, but they are going to have to find a way to figure out how to do it against teams that are big and tall and long and take some things away. And that's going to be a balancing out. I think Minnesota's hit a patch. I think they're going to look really good against certain teams and then have to figure it out against others. So I'm going to go Minnesota for now.
Okay.
With the right to change my answer.
Hey, listen, this is why I specify, like, as of this recording, you got time. We ain't even hit Christmas yet. You're good. Who do you have more belief in to turn things around? The Clippers in their 17th ranked offense or the Celtics in their 17th ranked defense?
Celtics.
Okay.
They have too much opportunity. Joe Mazzulla is too much of a madman. They'll compete.
Okay, fair enough. Do you have more belief in San Antonio's 12th ranked offense or Minnesota's 12th ranked defense?
San Antonio's offense, because Wimby's coming back.
Okay. All right. Well, while we are here, Steve, how real is this Dallas Mavericks defense as of recording? Sixth in defensive rating, ninth in half court defense, second in transition defense, though they're 20th in frequency, teams can run. And you look at like some of the under the hood stuff and what types of shots they're giving up and the percentages being allowed on those shots. It's like, it's a very interesting mix of, ooh, I see how this works. Ooh, I don't know how sustainable this is, et cetera. So what is your current belief level in the Dallas Mavericks defense?
Seven.
7 out of 10?
Okay. Well, because they are now throwing out zone defense and trying to junk things up and attacking matchups. And yeah, this feels more like the Dallas Mavericks that I know.
Yeah, very rude to the Miami Heat, particularly in the second half of that game. But that's okay. Steve, some trivia. The Oklahoma City Thunder, as of recording, currently flirting with the team's with the league's lowest turnover rate. Boston slightly ahead, 12% for Boston, 12.1% for OKC. And they are forcing turnovers at the highest rate in the league, OKC is. Who is the last team to finish both in turnover rate and forced turnover rate?
What year?
Last season.
Oh, dang, that's crazy.
I believe it.
Oh, no, I ain't got it. Is it the Pacers?
No.
The Grizzlies?
No.
The Thunder?
Yes.
Trick question. That's nasty work. Now,
bonus question, Steve. Who was the last non-Thunder team to do it?
The Grizzlies.
No.
The Spurs.
No.
The Heat.
No.
The Clippers.
No.
The Thunder.
No. That's it. The last non-Thunder team. And you say the Thunder? What is this?
The Knicks.
No.
The Bulls.
No.
Balloons.
No.
I don't know.
The 2022-23 Toronto Raptors have that one on the bingo card. The forced turnovers bit made sense. Them just not turning it over was not what I would have envisioned. But there you go. Also, while I was doing like four-factor stuff, shout out to the first stint of the Steve Clifford Hornets, who in his first 3 years, they were first in turnover rate and defensive rebound rate his first 3 years, and then it was first and third in the fourth year, and then it was third and second in the final year. That man has principles, and he sticks to them.
Salute to Steve Clifford.
Here we go. That's two for you,
Steve, okay,
for me. As of recording, per Clean the Glass, we have seven offenses with an offensive rating of at least 120. We had four last year. How many do you think we ultimately end up with this season?
Five.
Five, okay.
Yes.
All right, well, final question for me.
Yes.
Did you know, Steve, as of recording,
mm-hmm,
that the Denver Nuggets are on pace for the best offensive rating in NBA history?
I do know that now, and I also know, thank you for listening or watching to another episode of The Dunker Spot. You can find us available on the Yahoo Sports Network on all podcast platforms. Go ahead and hit that like and subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe, please. We're here every Tuesday and Friday. You can follow him on socials at Nikias NBA. You can follow me at socials at SteveJones20, and I hope everyone has a great day and be kind to each other. And do better than what Nikias Duncan just did.
Wow.